From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. North Korea has ruled out talks with U.S. officials on the sidelines of the Winter Olympic Games in South Korea. Senior North Korean officials said Pyongyang has never begged for dialogue with Washington. That's not surprising to research fellow Go Myung-hyun of the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies.
The U.S. side made it very clear from the beginning that didn't want to make Pyeongchang an opportunity for U.S. and North Korea to meet. The U.S. side is clearly worried about North Korea making Pyeongchang a stage for North Korea's propaganda campaign.
Earlier, Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson seemed to leave the door open for talks. Pence, who will lead the U.S. Olympic delegation, said in Japan the U.S. would soon unveil tough new sanctions against Pyongyang.
We will continue to intensify our maximum pressure campaign until North Korea takes concrete steps toward complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization.
Wednesday, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis insisted the dispute with the North over its nuclear missile programs is firmly in the diplomatic lane. Meanwhile, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's sister will make her debut on the world stage when she visits South Korea for the opening ceremonies Friday. Deputy South African President Cyril Ramaphosa Wednesday predicted a speedy resolution of President Jacob Zuma's exit from power over corruption allegations. Political analyst Sibisi Ndletyana cautioned Mr. Ramaphosa his likely successor must be cautious.
Cyril is worried that if it looks like the ANC pushes him out, he might be disruptive, might mobilize an ethnic base, because he feels that he's been dealt with rather harshly.
Mr. Ramaphosa said his dialogue efforts offer the best opportunity to resolve the matter. This is VOA News. In Syria, more than 30 civilians were reported killed Wednesday in continued Russian-backed Syrian airstrikes in the rebel-held enclave of eastern Ghouta near Damascus. Rescuers known as White Helmets rushed many of the casualties to awaiting ambulances heading to hospitals. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said nearly 400, about one-fourth of them children, have been killed in government operations since January 29. Meanwhile, the U.S. said it launched airstrikes on Syrian-backed forces Wednesday after they attacked elements of the Syrian Democratic Forces, accompanied by U.S. advisors near the Euphrates River. A U.S. official is quoted as saying more than 100 fighters were killed. There were no American casualties. Rescue workers continue to pull survivors and bodies from the wreckage of buildings that collapsed following a late Tuesday earthquake with a magnitude 6.4 that struck the Taiwan city of Hualien. So far, at least 9 were killed, more than 200 injured. Dozens are missing. The area suffered dozens of aftershocks. The U.S. Wednesday said it is shifting combat and intelligence-gathering aircraft to Afghanistan, targeting Taliban insurgents. Major General James Hecker heads the NATO Air Command in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan has become CENTCOM's main effort, thanks to the recent successes in Iraq and Syria. This has allowed CENTCOM to shift more assets our way, which will significantly improve our ability to assist the Afghans.
Hecker said CENTCOM Tuesday launched a new air attack in the north, targeting Taliban training facilities with guided munitions. While acknowledging you can't bomb the insurgents into submission, the general said it's another pressure point on them. More than 300 child soldiers were released Wednesday by armed groups in South Sudan. A small number of the estimated 19,000 believed to have been recruited during the five-year ethnic struggle. The UN said the release of the 87 girls and 224 boys is a first step in a process that should see hundreds more freed in coming weeks. But rights groups insist recruitments continue. German Chancellor Angela Merkel Wednesday announced a coalition agreement with the left-of-center Social Democrats, ending months of political uncertainty since her center-right government lost seats in September's election.
Die Bundesrepublik Deutschland wird mit diesem Koalitionsvertrag zurückkehren.
SPD leader Martin Schulz said with the agreement, Germany will return to an active and leading role in the European Union. As part of the deal, his party will take over the finance, foreign ministry, labor, justice, family, and environment portfolios. Wednesday was a seesaw day on Wall Street following the wild gyrations of the previous two sessions. The benchmark Dow Jones Index ended lower Wednesday by about 20 points following an early surge. It stands at 24,893. The Dow lost nearly 1,200 points Monday, followed by a 570-point gain Tuesday.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's Elections Commission says it is ready to hold the March 7th general elections.
The latest is that we've completed nominations of 16 presidential candidates and ordinary members of parliament, 132, over 446 councillors. Campaign started on the 4th of February, so we are prepared.
Mohamed Kanté is the chief of the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. Boko Haram leader releases a new video, but the Nigerian military says it's all a sign of desperation. Armed groups in South Sudan released 300 child soldiers, and Zimbabwe's ailing opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai names an acting president.
President Tsvangirai, before he went to South Africa, he said, I quote, "I think it is time for us to hand over to the next generation," close quote. Honestly speaking, the time has come that we start grooming or capacitating the next generation.
Tabitha Kumalo is a member of the opposition movement for democratic change of Zimbabwe. Drought in Malawi sparks mob violence and accusations of witchcraft. And a look at the murder of a prominent American ivory trade investigator. Those stories, plus some O'Malley sports, and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's National Elections Commission says it is ready to hold free and transparent March 7th presidential and parliamentary elections. Commission Chair Mohamed Kanté says campaigning among 16 presidential candidates began on Sunday, February 4th, and is so far going smoothly. President Ernest Bai Koroma is barred by the Constitution to seek a third term and is therefore stepping down. The three leading candidates are Samura Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress Party, retired Brigadier General Julius Mada Bio of the Sierra Leone People's Party, and Kande Yom Keller of the National Grand Coalition. Chief Kanté says his commission holds weekly meetings with political parties, civil society, and the security sector to forestall any problem.
The latest is that we've completed nominations of 16 presidential candidates and ordinary members of parliament, 132, over 446 councillors, etc. So we've completed the nominations. Campaign started on the 4th of February. It's in progress now, so we are prepared.
Mr. Chairman, you said about 16 candidates. There are many things happening around Africa when it comes to elections. Look what's happening in Kenya. We had in Liberia, they just finished that election, but there were so many complications. What is your commission doing to make sure that these elections will be free and fair and void of any complication?
Well, as I said, we are already prepared. Firstly, we are meeting with political parties almost every week. There is what we call a political parties liaison committee. We are in political parties and civil society organizations are meeting. We meet every week. We are also meeting with the security sector, the ONS, and the Sierra Leone police. So we are fully prepared. As I said, we've done nominations. Campaign is on now. And as I speak, we have not heard of any major problem with political parties and campaigning.
You mentioned working with this security. There was something I read yesterday about some arrangements being made that I think on the election day, some security arrangements. Could you explain it?
Well, the police are actually proposing that on election day, 7th March, there should be no vehicular movement except vehicles that are giving pass, some political parties, some essential services. But the opposition parties have not agreed to that. The police have prepared an MOU to be signed between the police and the National Electoral Court and political parties. But opposition parties have not agreed to that. That is a practice that was done in 2012 elections. But that one was cleared by National Electoral Commission, and then vehicular movement was restricted on election day. But this time around, they said that they don't want to accept that one.
There were complications in the other elections just across the border in terms of legal challenges.
The law says for presidential elections, after nominations, if people want, you can challenge the nomination of presidential candidates. And as I speak, I just got information today that the nomination of the flag bearer of the presidential candidate of the NGC National Grand Commission, Dr. Kande Yunkar has engaged in the Supreme Court. So that's just one of the legal challenge.
And I think it has to do with what, dual citizenship, is that correct?
Yes, it has to do with dual citizenship, but the first one, we dealt with that one. That was for the ordinary member of parliament. You know, he's contesting two elections. One at constituency level for ordinary members of parliament. The other one is the presidential. So then he was challenged for the other one, but we ruled in his favor against the ruling party, somebody from the ruling party. So that one is finished. This one now is for the presidential. So somebody has challenged his nominations at the Supreme Court.
Was it supposed to go to Supreme Court or was it supposed to come to your commission first?
No. For presidential, they go to the Supreme Court. That's part of the law. They go to the Supreme Court for objections to nominations of presidential candidates.
Mr. Chairman, when you allow Mr. Yunkar to run, as I said again, it was over dual citizenship, but you granted him the permission. What was the basis for your decision?
Well, at that level, I mean, the district returning officer ruled that there are no sufficient evidence produced by the objector. So the district returning officer in Cambia ruled against the objector. That is in favor of Dr. Kande Yunkar.
Now that a legal case has been filed against Mr. Yunkar, is he still eligible to continue his campaign?
Yes, he's eligible to continue his campaign until proved otherwise by the Supreme Court.
Mohamed Kantes, Chief of the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. The leader of Nigeria's Boko Haram terrorist group has reportedly released a new video in which he taunts the military and threatens to unleash more violence in the northeastern region of the country. This comes a few days after the Nigerian military said it rescued 30,000 hostages over the last 2 years from Boko Haram captivity. The military said it made significant gains in degrading the terrorist group's ability. The military also said it has secured the headquarters of Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest. But in the reported video, leader Abubakar Shekau said his fighters are still in the Sambisa forest. Major General Rogers Ibe Nicholas, theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole, says Boko Haram's new bluster is all a sign of desperation.
That has been the severe tactics of releasing video whenever it's under pressure. We've studied the video. We are continuing the operations. We are not concerned about whatever he says in the video. Our operations are going on as planned. The headquarters in Sambisa Forest have been captured. The various camps have been destroyed and his equipment destroyed. So he's on the run. So this is a desperate move. This is an action of desperate people. Whenever he's in such a situation, he goes about making marriage and all that. But we're watching him over.
Major General, he appears to be taunting the security forces, including the military. You mentioned that you have taken over the Sambisa forest. I mean, he said that that his fighters are still there. They are still in the Sambisa. And he asked here, where are the police wives that are being arrested by us? He's taunting the security forces.
Like I said, the Sambisa forest is a very big forest, a very big area. So, he has some of his fighters in the fringes of the Sambisa who have deserted his camp. So, we're after them. We're still going after them. So, the battle is still on. We're ensuring that everywhere is encircled and nobody escapes. So, that's what we're doing.
He disputes the claim that the group is being decimated. He disputes that.
Well, what do you expect from him? The group is decimated seriously. He has no capacity to carry out any kind of very offensive operation that he normally does. So we're in the Sambisa Forest, we're taking over all his camps, we're taking over his headquarters. So he definitely has to come out with a little propaganda to support the device. But whatever balance he has, it's in the Sambisa Forest. But we're after them, we're there with them, and we're combing the whole of the Sambisa Forest. While they're on the run, we're following them through.
As you mentioned, Major General, the Sambisa forest is very big. Could it be that maybe the Shakekau is not in the Sambisa or he's not even in Nigeria and he's doing this, as you mentioned, propaganda? What is your intelligence telling you? Do you think that he's still in Nigeria, in the Sambisa?
Well, you know, intelligence operations is for the military operations. It's not for public consumption. So whatever intelligence I have is from our operations. It's not for public consumption for now.
Major General Nicholas, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Major General Rogers Ibe Nicholas is the theater commander of Operation Lafia Dole. He was speaking with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, February 8th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, the Movement for Democratic Change, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, appears to be in disarray following Tsvangirai's decision to appoint one of the party's three vice presidents, Nelson Chamisa, as acting president until the ailing former trade unionist returns from South Africa, where he is receiving treatment for colon cancer. Some members of the MDC formation are protesting Chamisa's appointment, calling him Tsvangirai's heir apparent over veteran Deputy Tokozani Kupe and technocrat Vice President Elias Monzuri. Zimbabwe will hold elections by July this year. Deputy spokesman Tabita Kumalo tells viewers Zimbabwe service reporter Gabe Dube that Tsvangirai made the right decision to appoint Chamisa because it's time for the young people to take over the leadership of their party.
President Tsvangirai, before he went to South Africa, he said, I quote, I think it is time for us to hand over to the next generation, close quote. Honestly speaking, the time has come that we start grooming or capacitating the next generation, because there are no ways that at my age, I've been fighting this struggle for 40 years. And honestly, is it fair that my own child joins me in this struggle again and spends another 40 years fighting this regime? No. The onus is now on us to capacitate this next generation to fight this junta and find possible ways to remove the junta. The reason being simple. The language that we are speaking as the old generation is completely different to our new generation. They don't understand why you are doing what we are doing. They don't understand why we did what we did. They don't understand why we are killing this country. Because to them, this country is potential. So since Zimbabwe is potential from their eyes, talking of a global village, the time has come for the next generation to make sure they start chasing the global village because they've been left behind.
So now, is this not going to divide the party? Because there are some people who are saying that Mr. Tsvangirai doesn't have the powers to actually appoint a person who could be a possible successor.
First and foremost, it's very interesting to hear such words because I'm quite amazed that there are people who are able to open their mouth and say that without facts. Can each and everyone that is listening at this point in time please refer to the MDC 2014 Congress resolutions? What powers were granted to the president of the MDC? And go further and go to the National Council resolution soon after the first National Council soon after the Congress. The resolutions are very clear. They are not ambiguous. Whether they are wrong or right, that is something else. But in terms of the MDC, one of our policies is that we have to respect constitutionalism. Now, the third thing is that, which I don't understand with some people, is that these resolutions were tabled in October 2014 at the MDC Congress. The same leaders who are complaining were part of that Congress, and some of them were elected in that Congress, and they were part and parcel of those resolutions. Now, why are they turning around now, 2018, and complaining that he has no powers? What are they talking about?
So what is the particular resolution which says that he can actually appoint even his successor? Is there such a resolution?
It says the president of the MDC has a right to appoint and disappoint the standing committee members. If you go to the MDC constitution on the role of the National Council has the powers to uphold, amend, repeal, appoint anyone that they would have chosen as the National Council. So who then telling us that there is no room like that? It is in our constitution. Those are the powers of the National Council. And the president was granted those powers by the National Council, where he was told that he can appoint and disappoint, and he must expand the National Council.
So most of these people are calling for maybe an extraordinary Congress if ever something happens to Mr. Tsvangirai. Do you think the MDC can go that route?
Well, I don't know whether these people who are clamoring for an extraordinary Congress are genuine to the people of Zimbabwe. Honestly, we are running towards a fire, and we need water to extinguish that fire. We have only got, 4 or 5 months to go to the election, and then somebody decides we need to go to a Congress. And at war, you do not change platoon during battle. You would all be wiped out by the enemy.
Tabitha Kumalo is the deputy spokesman of the opposition movement for democratic change of Zimbabwe. He was speaking from Harare with Gabes Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. More than 300 children, including 87 girls, were released yesterday by armed groups in South Sudan's Yambio Budu state. The United Nations Children's Fund says at least 700 children are expected to be freed in the coming weeks. This marks the first time an armed group has released children from its ranks in more than a year. It also marks the largest release of children in nearly 3 years, according to the United Nations Children's Fund. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
215 children aged between 10 and 16 years were released by the South Sudan National Liberation Movement. 96 children were released by the SPLM-IO. 13-year-old Moses Kumbo says he voluntarily joined other children who were aiding the rebels because he was facing many challenges and saw no other options.
So in the bush, we were there under the command of Brigadier General John Ume. So actually, we were the security personnel. He could send us to stand on, at the roadside and to know if the government sends the soldiers to come and attack us in the bush, and we send the information back to our commanders, and we could also loot some properties from the people who are passing, and we could also kidnap some and take them back.
Moses says he dropped out of school in primary 5, but now is ready to return to school. 14-year-old D. John says he was abducted and was forcefully recruited by rebels while on his way to his parents' farm in Gangura Payam in 2015 when fighting intensified in his area.
We are just cooking food and give to the soldiers.
John says he is happy to rejoin his family and hopes they will welcome him back into the community. The children were released at a ceremony attended by government and military officials along with aid workers in the Budu state capital, Yambio. During the ceremony, the children were formally disarmed and provided with civilian clothes. UNICEF says it will conduct medical screenings and provide the children with counseling and psychosocial support to enable them to reintegrate into their communities. Aid agencies will also provide 3 months' worth of food assistance to the children's families to support their initial reintegration. They will also receive vocational training aimed at improving household income and food security. UNICEF says the children with relatives in their area will be reunited with their families, while others will be placed in interim care centers until their families can be traced. South Sudan Defense Minister Kwol Manyang says his ministry has issued standing orders to field commanders not to recruit children into the army.
Children should not even stay in the barracks. They should not be made to wear military uniform. I don't expect any violation to these standing orders. In order to get support from the UN, we signed the action and extended it. The aim is to declare SPLA as a child-free army.
Minister Manyang says the SPLA has formed child protection units to ensure that no child is recruited into the army. Despite today's release of hundreds of child soldiers, UNICEF says some 19,000 children continue to serve in the ranks of the armed forces and other militia groups more than 4 years after the conflict first erupted in December 2013. The agency says it needs another $45 million this year to support the release, demobilization, and reintegration of child soldiers across South Sudan. Gift Friday, VOA News, Juba.
A dry spell in parts of southern Malawi has rekindled accusations of witchcraft and bouts of mob violence. Authorities have been quick to condemn the attacks and dispel the accusations as a hoax. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from the Falombe district.
January 29, 2018 is a day that will be hard for Ida Wison to forget. She is the resident of Tambula village in Malawi's southern Palombe district. She says we were about to take our supper when we saw a mob of armed young men approaching my house. She says she feared for her life and immediately ran into the bush. From there, she says she saw the mob set fire to several houses. Wison is among 8 villagers targeted that day over accusations that they were withholding rains through magic. Police say there have been similar rumors circulating in other parts of the district, but no other violence. The villagers say the area has been without rain since December. Crops have wilted, raising fears of hunger. A mob ransacked the home of a 76-year-old traditional leader, Jameson Maiden. He says, "I am surprised with the accusations because my maize garden has wilted because of the drought." He says, "How could I withhold the rains and leave myself with nothing to eat?" The latest figures from the Ministry of Agriculture show that more than 700,000 farmers are expected to lose 40% of their harvest this year because of low rainfall. Farmers are advised to plant early maturing varieties should the rains come. Police say they have arrested 6 people in connection with the attacks as the hunt continues for others who fled to neighboring Mozambique. Spokesperson for Palombe Police Station, Innocent Moses, told VOA their preliminary investigations reveal the violence is related to unresolved chieftaincy wrangles. He says members of the community are taking advantage of the drought and local superstitions. Palombe is the same district that saw 7 people killed by angry mobs last year over rumors of alleged vampires attacking residents. The village of Ntambula bears the same name as its group headman. He spoke to VOA. He says there were no bloodsuckers then, and there is no one who is withholding rains now. He says these are just tricks used to steal other people's property. Meanwhile, the director of Meteorological Department in Malawi, Jola Munkokwe, explains the reason for the drought.
Because the high pressure system has been sitting over the region, southern Africa, including southern part of Malawi, and that has been preventing any development of clouds.
He told VOA that the high pressure system has begun to dissipate, and as a result, some affected areas have already started receiving rains. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Palombe, Malawi.
One of the world's top investigators into the illegal ivory and rhino horn trade was recently found dead in his Nairobi home with a stab wound in his neck. He was known for undercover work that exposed illegal ivory traffickers in the markets. Esmond Bradley Martin's research also led to China's ban of its legal ivory sales earlier this year. Viewers Maria Mandialo reports.
The future for the African elephant can be quite encouraging.
The prominent American investigator spent decades tracking the movement of animal products, mostly from Africa to markets in Asia.
We have about 400,000 to 450,000 elephants in Africa. We're losing maybe 20 to 25,000 a year. Most of that seems to be going into China.
Although, at a conference in 2016, he warned the ivory trade was shifting from China to neighboring countries.
Now, the big difference between China and Vietnamese markets is the China market on the retail legal side, and perhaps on the illegal retail side as well, has been going down. But the Vietnam market has been absolutely booming.
The 75-year-old also said there were big ivory markets in Africa that needed to be shut down.
One can go to Angola and just see 23 tables with 10,000 pieces of ivory. It's completely illegal. And you see the same kind of thing in Nigeria, Egypt, Sudan, and sometimes Ethiopia.
While his work has helped crack down on poachers and exposed markets, he said more work was needed.
That report by viewers Maria Mandialo. And that's it for this Thursday, February 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll speak with Bobby Wine, the outspoken Ugandan member of parliament, is a businessman, activist, humanitarian, and musician. His lyrics often advocate for Uganda's struggling and poor. Bobby Wine joins host Shaka Sali to discuss his role as an artist in African politics.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.